This next story is tough to listen to. It comes from a guy named Timothy Mignard, who spent years in law enforcement investigating international human trafficking. His stories deal with some very, very difficult subject matter, the exploitation of children. This is not a story that's appropriate for kids, and it's going to be hard for a lot of adults to hear as well. But we feel it's an important story, one that conveys the horrors of the crime and the impact on the people who work to stop it. It's about 12 minutes long, so if you want to skip this one, take care, and we'll see you next week. Tim Mignard has to live with those difficult memories. They've contributed to his post-traumatic stress disorder, so to talk about it, we found a peaceful spot in his backyard in a rural part of Pierce County.
When I need to talk, this is where I come. Got a good view of the mountain, and usually this grass is rustling a bit like it is now, and it kind of sucks the pain out of it. I always tend to seek out shade just because I'm terminally Scottish.
Mignard is a big man, over 6 feet tall, about 300 pounds, with a bald head and a great big red beard. But his manner is gentle, and he's honest about the scars that he carries from being exposed so long to humanity's dark side.
I was an executive protection provider in the International District in Seattle.
Security guy.
Yeah. The man that I worked for did not willfully participate in human trafficking, but he was a very large player in the import-export field. Vietnam, Thailand, Hong Kong, places like that. But a lot of his money and a lot of his contacts, whenever I'd travel out of the country with him, I would interact with these people. I knew that they were bad people at the time, but...
How could you tell?
Well, when you're sitting in a room watching them play their gambling games and there's concerning looking gentlemen standing around with fully automatic weapons and there's checkpoints, it's kind of obvious there's some illegitimate going on. And I had witnessed obvious transgressions. I mean, some of the women that were around these guys were clearly in their early teens. I knew, but I never felt compelled to do anything. I still harbor a little guilt from that, but it was what it was. The truth is, it got me in deep enough that when I was approached by State Department and Department of Justice inquiring about my interest in helping, it went from there and turned into a full-time gig, basically.
So would you be posing as a broker or a customer? How would you wind up on site in these places?
I had already developed a reputation amongst all of these people, and it gave me insight and opportunities to do surveillance work, develop plans, locate compounds where the distribution points and actual operations where they house the girls and sometimes boys. It was a very exciting time. Initially, I thought I was saving the world.
And tell me more about that. How did you kind of feel about the work you were doing? Where did you see your mission?
Well, I was never sexually abused as a child, but I was abused emotionally and physically terribly as a child. And I look back on it now and I realize that I felt like I was lashing out at that and doing anything I could possibly do to protect other kids. And my intent was, I'm going to end this. I'm going to stop this. I'm going to stop them or kill them, whatever. I don't care. It eventually I came to the realization that I couldn't stop it, but I could make it as goddamn difficult on them as I could. The gist is we had one of our guys, he would go into these clubs and he had the energy and the looks to get away with all kinds of crazy, right? My other two primary teammates, my handler and my best friend on the planet, we would do a lot of the peripheral surveillance and security while he did his thing. And we would gain access to these brothels. It became very delicate at those points because when our fourth team member would go into these rooms or into these places with these young girls, he had to very carefully determine whether or not he could just say, no, you know what, never mind, I'm married or something, I can't do this. Or he could actually just give them a little extra money and say, listen, I just want to sit. he, not unlike all of us, at one point or another have had to sit and listen to little girls be raped. And it's misery. And you never get it out of your mind. But it would give us direct access to, once we knew where the brothels were, we could figure out who the operators were. When we figured out who the operators were, we could track them back to distribution points and assets. I eventually learned it didn't matter. You end one operation and somebody just picks it up from there. And that's how I came to terms with the fact that it was time to get the whole save the world thing out of my mind and just concentrate on making it really difficult. I remember that being a really bitter pill. Really bitter.
Would you be comfortable talking about like a particular operation? I don't know if there was a particular bad guy that you worked really hard to track down and to put out of business, that you could kind of walk us through that story.
Yeah. This particular story started out as a custodial issue. The father absconded with the children out of the Everett area. And by the time I got the case, it had gone from a custodial kidnap to a pornography issue. And what this guy was doing was he was renting out his 6 and 8 year old son and daughter, renting them out at parties. But he was a sicko. And he was one of those guys that was hard to find, but we found him in Arizona. And my partner and I, we located the residence he was in and did a quick surveillance and determined his presence. The kids were there. Everything was quiet, nothing crazy going on. Lights went out. We waited a couple hours, and then we decided we'd do a stealth entry.
I'm going to just pipe up here and again say this story is pretty upsetting and is not appropriate for kids. Mignard says he and his partner entered the house, and they found the guy asleep with the daughter. There was a gun on the side table. Mignard woke the guy up, pointing his own gun in his face, and with thoughts of pulling the trigger, just said, "Go ahead."
There was a pause, and then I felt this bear paw on my right shoulder, and it was my partner. And he said, don't do this. She's been through enough. If you kill somebody in front of her, it's how is that going to help?
So you were waiting for him to go for his weapon, and that would give you a pretext to do him in?
Yeah, I was just going to shoot him right in the face. That's all he deserved. I still feel he deserved it, but that little girl there and my partner, you know, brought me back to at least a common sense circumstance. I got her and her little brother, and I waited for the equivalent down there, Child Protective Services, to come get them. They were going to facilitate an almost immediate transportation. While we're sitting at this Denny's-like place, the little girl was the older, and she clearly was the protector of the boy. She said, "Well, why can't you take us back? You won't hurt us." And I said, "Well, honey, that's really not how it works. And I have other kids. I gotta go help. And then, you know, these people will take good care of you. You'll be safe. And they'll get you home to your mom, and you can get back to somewhere safe." And she said, "Well," she said, "I'll give you any sex you want." And I was physically ill with the sincerity and the commitment in that statement to me. And I told her, "Honey, that's not how things are." I said, I'm that's not okay. You're a beautiful being. This isn't how you need to be treated." I didn't know what to say. But I saw to the end of that. They got home to their mom. That's one of my particular traumas, because I have a daughter and my stepdaughter. That's really when it all started to fall in 1998, when my daughter was born. And I really started taking these scoundrels very personally. I didn't want them in the same world that my daughter was in. I really eventually got so bad that I was a liability to everybody. My team was covering for my missteps, and I was risking their lives and their careers. And that's finally in 2007. It just was time to go. And I knew it was time to go. I couldn't handle the work anymore.
So what are the ways that you found to
cope with this and to be okay with your memories?
Well, I've really had to learn to accept compliments. It's still hard when someone says thank you for everything you've done. And I try to hold on to that and realize that, you know, I did good work. Therapy is a regular need. My wife is the most stubborn, obnoxious turd on the planet, but I love her to pieces. And the fact that she tolerates me is pretty incredible. And then moving back to my roots, you know, when I grew up, despite my childhood, I grew up on a small functional farm, a whole lot more property than this, but there's always something to fix. There's always something to mow. There's always animals to tend. I get to do a little patrol every night with the dogs and make sure that everybody's roosted up for the night and there's no stragglers. We've got coyotes and whatnot around.
Could you show me around a little bit, maybe, and introduce me to some of these critters?
This is where they sleep at night.
Mostly chickens in here?
Yeah, we have English Orpingtons. We have Buff Orpingtons.
So can I ask you just one more thing?
Yeah.
What do you get out of taking care of these animals?
Frankly, I feel useful having all these babies around to care for and look after. Kind of keeps my super cop gene in check. It's probably more ego boost than anything, but it helps me feel needed. That's pretty much what it boils down to.
Timothy Mignard is out of the law enforcement business. He lives in rural Pierce County.